fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Like no. through the hourglass. Or the song of our lives. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, composer, a writer, the founder of Foxy Digitalis, and someone who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on a guest to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Malto Ohm, Carlos Cafoni, Ben Saratan, Danya, Charmaine Lee. The list goes on. This week, got an old head on, somebody I've known for a long, long time. Brett Naki is my guest, and yeah. It's back in the Digitalis days that Brett and I used to first were in touch back when he ran Catholic Tapes, put out a bunch of cool stuff, but now he is got a new solo record out. Well, it came out last year, but there's a new pressing out now, called Ground Fault Matinee. And I feel like the title tells you a lot about the record because it is, you know, there's this sort of duality of it. And, and also his answer to the last question, his favorite songs question, because he picked two things. Those two things, it all makes sense to me. That's what the record is. We talk about it a lot. It's just people have been saying it's his punk record, which I really like. Anyway, it's a fucking great record. It is fun and weird and challenging and kind of abrasive, but also melodic. I don't know. It is everything. Anyway, it was really cool to have Brett on the show. Like I said, we've known each other for a long time and, you know, love having the old heads, the lifers on. So go check out the record and hope you enjoy the episode. My guest today is a musician, a composer, a synthesist, how about that? A gardener, because we did a whole interview about gardens. It's Brett Naki. Woo!
Thank you.
How is the garden these days?
Garden's good. We'll probably start back on it just because it's kind of the end of the winter. But we got tulips. We got everything kind of popping up right around now in Asheville. And looking out the window and it's kind of dead, but it'll get back real soon. Plants in the inside's never only ever getting more unmanageable. So,
Say it. That's the way you want it, frankly. Okay. So you got a record. So it came out in the fall, but it's like you have a new edition or I guess new pressing. Is that more, I guess?
We did it in November, Ground Fault Matinee, and then I did a really brief tour, and we just didn't press that many because I really wasn't sure. I haven't pressed my own record in a really long time, and I was kind of unsure about what to do, and it immediately sold out. So we ran a second press and then did the sort of like the new wave of a record release just recently here in Asheville, and kind of doing more shows around that as well.
Awesome. So Ground Fault Matinee, it's your first record in 3 years, right?
Yeah, just about.
What what was going on in those 3 years?
Making the record and then I'm kind of always working on like two records at once. That's kind of been a habit of mine. It's like probably not the best habit. I just don't know how to not do it. It ends up, especially throughout like the 2010s, there'd be like, you know, the Spectrum Spools records every couple of years, and then it would be like maybe like three EPs in between that would kind of be like, okay, once I'm with this, I can sort of mentally unpack like these three other things that were kind of getting made. And then after I did the Ceremony of Seasons record in 2022, which is like way more of like an almost like of the ambient persuasion kind of thing, like a very different record for me, I kind of just wanted to work on like some just, I hate saying atonal, but like just something totally different. And I've just been working with a ton of FM synthesis stuff. I've been working on a synth that was coming out and I was doing presets. I was like really in this FM zone where I was really enjoying that. And then also just like working on Buchla and Surge recordings, which couldn't have sounded less different. And then eventually it just became, okay, I want to write these compositions for just an FM piece and then just this Buchla piece. And they eventually just got so like bloated and kind of out of so I just was like, how do we condense these? And I was like, I like the idea of like a variety hour or like a matinee of something that's like fast and quick. And so I kind of just decided these might work really well as two EPs on one record. That was how I was kind of treating it anyway, but they were really just these like sidelong pieces. It ended up working out great. The response to the record's been really cool. Everyone's like really surprised just because it's very fast. It's very loud. I feel like it's just like, a number of people have told me my punk record, which is, I don't know what that means.
I like but that.
It's kind of like,
I love it.
I'm starting to settle into that a little bit more. At least comparatively to your ensemble or anything else that's where it's like, this couldn't be different.
Right. What's it been like playing this stuff out? Like, some, I'm just, yeah, I don't know. It feels like this sort of punk record. That makes sense to me. I don't know. I can imagine like going and seeing this and, yeah, just wanting to like dance and run into people.
It's so funny. It's been really intense and it's really fun to play, but I'm like trying to play as much of the material as like humanly possible live without it just being like a playback kind of thing. I also can't use most of what was recorded on it. Like the A-sides, a lot of like staple analog synths, a lot of which I don't own.
Right.
You know, if I did, I wouldn't be bringing them out anyway. And then the B-side, I could, but it's, I don't know how to play the record. So it's sort of this like of like, almost like live remixing the record and then playing it back through like different ways. And I will say it's like, it's the shortest sets I've done in a long time with the most music in them. Like, And I sort of feel like, I feel exhausted playing it, but it's really fun. Like, it's like, this is just, there's so much.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Any like cut changes, and it's so different than what I've been doing for years that it's it's been really rewarding, but it is like kind of exhausting to play it live. After like 3 shows in a row of doing it, I was like, whoa, I can't do this every night. I don't know. Like in my head it feels like playing Harsh Noise, but it's like it's not. But it's like I sort of feel like how like Aaron Dillaway looks like on stage. Right. Which is like my favorite thing, don't get me wrong. It's just sort of like
yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, that sounds super intense. I mean, I think, you know, it's really interesting. Like, I think fun is, because I do think this is a weirdly fun record. And I think, I don't know, I'm very much in this space right now with my own set where like fun is a very, you know, the fucking world's burning down. Like, fun feels really important and sort of almost radical in a way. Was like working on this. I mean, was that any part of your approach? Like, is like, I want to do something that's fun. I want to have.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I think there was something where when we were leaving Chicago, like in 2021, I was just working on like the follow-up to Mirror Ensemble, which was going to be like a bigger band. And it was all solo music. And I'm finishing that record now. So I've made two full lengths since I started that record. at some point, I think, and kind of, again, like the Ceremony of Seasons record was like much more of like an ambient, like soundtrack record. So it was, I didn't want to make like anything that was like melodic in any capability. And I think that for me was really fun. And I kept thinking about like the sound of like the title kind of came from like the sound of like ground faults or like, just like pure the sound of electricity, which is mostly like Foley sounds are not like real. Like, you know, when you hear like in movies, but I love those sounds or like electrical shocks. And it was like sort of fun being like, I just want to like synthesize those types of sounds became like kind of the backbone. I also like love like cartoony sounds and like, you know, things like that. So that was definitely like the fun aspect of this, of like how kind of wacky. And I think like, I love all of the history of like, you know, Buchla synthesis music or Subotnick or whatever it is, but it's like, it's wacky. Like there's a lot of just sort of like nuts, like, it's easy to get really serious in experimental music. And it's like, sometimes it's like pretty funny and not in like a bad way. It's just like, this is insane sounding. So I think that was like a relief of not trying to be like, oh, I'm trying to make this thing that's like pretty, I think most of the stuff I do is like pretty serious, where this one was, the art's so different. Everything about it was different. So I was kind of like, yeah, I want this to be like fun and like a little bit more like I didn't think about like the punk aspect to it, but like so many people brought that up that I was like, oh, that's interesting. Like,
like I think about that too, how a lot of experimental music is very serious and like, you know, people talk about, oh, it's very emotional. It's very melancholic. It's very, it's like, yeah, but like joy is an emotion too. And it's just as like, can we, and so I don't know. I get, that's part of what like excited me about this is because, yeah, like, I mean, I've, you know, we've known each other forever now. And I remember your, I mean, I probably still have some of your really early tapes somewhere around here, but like those last few records, this feels very different. It still sounds like something, like, it doesn't surprise me that you made this, but I do like that it does show this sort of other side. And I love, by the way, the title is really great. That's the combination of like ground fault, like this, you know, electrical danger kind of thing. And then a matinee is, to me, there's something like weirdly, it's that thing. It's like weird and it's kind of like serious and harsh, but it's also kind of whimsical.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was funny because they were like two, you know, the two sides were completely different things and they were a lot more like serious. They weren't broken out into like individual songs. And then I had that title like sitting in a note somewhere. And I think I saw it. I probably wrote it down 10 years ago or something. And I saw it and I was like, oh, I think I kind of know what this is now. Like, because it was like, okay, am I really going to work this hard on two different pieces that could never be played together? And then I need to like, these aren't going to be two records. You know what I, like, it was like, I think these are all being shelved if this is the way that this happened. And I just kept thinking about like variety hours. And it was the same thing with art, where it was like, once I had this like Polaroid of a Rat Fink statue, I was like, yeah, okay, this all makes sense to me now. Like,
yes.
And a friend of mine, like on the back, there's like Calvin pissing on my name. And I was like, yes.
Oh, amazing.
Back, like, I was like, this is exactly what
this
is. Like, this is just like,
yeah. That's awesome. Oh, man. Yeah. That's wow. That's I love that. No, I think it, I don't know. I feel like it's one of those things when if you describe it to somebody without them hearing it, you're just going to probably get a lot of confused looks. But then for me, it's like, once you hear it And yeah, see the cover. I haven't seen the back cover yet, but like the cut and all of it and the name and the title, like it all makes perfect sense to me. So awesome. With that, we're going to move on to questions about songs. And this is my great segue here. Okay. As always, going to start. What is the first song that you remember?
I chose Borderline by Madonna.
Yeah.
I don't think that, you know, it's like, I don't think this was the first song I ever heard, but it's the first song, like, sure. I remember, like, that I really remember being like, I like this song. I'm aware of this song. I've heard it more than once. like, I'm 40, so it's like, I barely remember like 1989 or whatever, you know what I mean? That's sort of like where I feel like I came online.
Yeah.
And my dad had like one of those like big ghetto blaster like tape and radios. Mm-hmm. I just remember that playing like in the summers, like in our backyard and just kind of like running around. And like, I feel like Madonna was so ubiquitous in that like era.
Totally.
And like my mom really liked Madonna. My sister loved Madonna. And there was way other, like, I was thinking about it and I was like, well, I feel like Madonna is the way to go, but like Borderline wasn't the biggest hit of those, but I've always enjoyed that song. Like, early,
it's a great song.
I like it. I feel like it's like a way more mature, mm-hmm. I hate that word, but there's something about that song that's, to me, I've liked so much more than like Material Girl or Like a Virgin or all those songs, which, mm-hmm. yeah. So it's something about Borderline. It's just one of those things where I was just like, yeah, that's the thing that I always remember about like, just coming off the radio.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
Right.
In a really good period of radio.
Yeah, no, I totally agree that it's like, it's a more like sophisticated song. I don't know, because, you know, I mean, it's all about like love and boundaries and
yeah,
and it's like really vulnerable, and I don't know. And now, like, as like, you know, a fucking synth nerd, the synths rule on it. Like, they're really good.
That's something like that's probably gonna come up throughout all of these, but it's so many songs that I heard when I was really young and then kind of forgot about, and then you hear again when you have like you're in high school or after, where you have like a little mm-hmm. bit more of like a discerning taste, or you were hearing different things. And the programming on the first record on this Madonna record is fantastic. Like, it's
yeah.
really rubbery and bassy and great. And yeah, it's so good. Like, all, and I love most Madonna stuff up until what is, I think, a reasonable point to probably fail. music, maybe, I don't know, but
yeah
like all the Ray of Light stuff was great. I mean, like, all of the mm-hmm. catalog's great up until probably the early 2000s, I would guess.
Right. Yeah, no, that's definitely was as I got older and kind of just realizing how well made so stuff is, and then having somewhat of like a better understanding of it doing my own stuff and working with electronics and synths and drum programming and stuff, it's like, oh geez, this is I mean, of course not. I mean, they're getting they got like the best of everything to
sure.
but yeah, I mean, those are, it's always interesting having those realizations. Like, I had in the last few years, I kind of realized, I think my love and obsession of arpeggios goes back to being like 10 years old and wanting to learn how to finger tap on guitar. And like, finger tapping guitar was my favorite thing when I was into metal. And it's like, that's the same thing. Yeah, <It's> like,
Yeah, no, I mean, like, when I was a kid, I had no conception of how, you know, like, I loved Depeche Mode and stuff like that. Like, even in high school, I had no concept of how it was physically made. I just assumed everyone's just like, I didn't know there was, like, this was sequenced or that there was no clue about it. And I think once you have that with sensor, you know, or like programming or whatever, you're like, whoa, this is incredible. Like, I thought it was good. Now this is wildly insane.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. What is a song that either makes you cry, actually makes you cry, or makes you feel that kind of way?
I chose such a hard Clam Crab Cackle Cowrie by Joanna. This was the easiest question for me. And it's one that I'm like, I'm not, this is not a song this kid can listen to. It's like instant.
Oh, man.
This album came out when I was like, probably like 18. And it was like a huge hit with like my friends and I, and I loved it. I've sort of like followed her other records over the years. Everything I've ever heard from her, I think is fantastic, but I've definitely not heard all of it. And but I don't think I'd heard this record in 10 plus years or something like that. And I was like, I worked from home, and my cat, I like, right when I heard this record again, I forgot about this song entirely. Like, I was like, and I heard it and I was like, whoa, this song's amazing. It was almost like hearing it for the first time. And I was like, what a beautiful, like, tender song. And like, my cat, there was like this like 2-day period where I was listening to this song, and every time I'd play it, he would just like come in and like hang out, and I was like, oh, is this your is this your thing?
Like, cat's favorite song.
Yeah, like, and like any cat owner will attribute some silly things to your cat.
Of course.
Oh, you love Joanna Newsom. And so during Hurricane Helene, like maybe a year and a half ago, like in the middle of it, after everything was already just like miserable and like all of Asheville was like devastated, our cat Roland like really unexpectedly passed. And it was just like, I mean, still it's like hard to even talk about, but he passed. And then I didn't really associate the song with him. I didn't really think about it. And then I heard it somewhere and just like completely broke down. Like, I was like, that's not. And this song's already, it's, I don't know if it's like inherently sad, but it's so tender, and it has this sort of like, you know, everything about her is just like so, it's hard to describe. Like, her music's so whimsical and sort of easy to listen to, and it really brings you in. And then associating that with the cat, but it's also like, that's very funny to me. Like, I think it's inherently funny that like my cat possibly enjoyed this song.
Right. I love it.
At the same time, like, it's just like this, it's like instant tears.
It's funny.
I love to listen to this song, but I don't think that's happening anytime.
Right. No, when I first started this podcast, it's been like, God, 2 years now? You're now, I don't know. I have no concept of time, but I think it's been 2 years. I recorded an episode where I was the guest and one of my friends like hosted it. So I answered all the questions. My answer for this question was Sadie from the same record.
Oh, that's crazy. Which is also a really intense song.
Yeah. And I think like the thing that, and I think that honestly, Joanna Newsom comes up the most on this podcast.
That's interesting.
It's And you know, I'm spoiler alert for everybody. I'm recording an episode next week with Walker from Make Noise. And he also picked a Joanna Newsom song. Anyway.
Oh my gosh. I was hesitant to pick it. Like, I was like, like, no, that's crazy to hear.
She's like genuinely probably one of my favorite artists in the world. And I don't know. I keep saying to people like, there's gotta be a new record coming, 'cause it's been like forever, but this record is it's still my favorite record of hers. And I think like the thing about it, it's so like, she has this weird ability that makes like everything feels so vast but impossibly intimate at the same time. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, you know, I mean, Sadie, it's about her dog, or like this, there's these, it's about these tiny creatures, and it's so tender, and it's, but it's also like everything in the universe. It's just, I don't know, man.
100%. We, right when this record came out, a friend of mine at the time, we were working together, and he was like, I went to see this person last night. I'd never heard of her. It was like right when the record came out. Mm-hmm. And we got to drive like an hour and a half to go see her in this other city, like tonight, right after work. And I was like, okay. Had no idea what it was. Like, didn't hear the record. And we got there. And yeah, within 2 seconds, there was this little theater in Columbia, Missouri. And it was so powerful. Like, I had no idea what it was going to be. And then we listened to the record like 3 times on the way home. Because it was just this thing. I was like, well, no one sounded like that. I mean,
right.
Before or since, but it was, yeah, there's something about it does sound massive, but it's just like a Harkin voice. It's very simple.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Well, on the other side, what is a song that will put you in a better mood?
I picked Alice Coltrane, Journey in Sashinada, that has Pharoah Sanders playing on that record. I didn't realize I was doing this until my wife told me, which was like every like Saturday morning you put this record on. Like, and I was like, I didn't notice this at all.
Yeah.
It's such a good record to like start your day off. I mean, everything Alice Coltrane's great does is phenomenal. It's probably my favorite record of hers. But this song just has this like, we've brought up Whimsical, but the song just sounds like it was always there. Like it just came out of thin air or something.
It's like she tapped into something and pulled it out of the cosmos.
And again, like I didn't realize I was putting this, usually this or like another Alice Coltrane record, just like, or like a lot of times I'll like start the day with like especially on the weekends, like I have nothing to do, like Miles Davis, or you know, like In a Silent Way, I really like putting on in the morning, or like John Haskell, sort of like very like records that I feel like are very light but also kind of wake you up. But this one, every time I hear it, I'm like, yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
in the rarity, I feel like now she's so much more well known, which is amazing. And like I've been in like restaurants and places where this record will like come on, or someone's maybe DJing it, and you're just like instantly like great, perfect choice.
Yep.
Every time I've heard this song or this record, but specifically, you know, like opening the record with this song, just the way it starts is just, I'm just like perfect. Yeah, it's gonna be a good day.
Yeah, yeah. It's a perfect song on a perfect record. Frankly, I don't know. Yeah, Alice Coltrane's probably, yeah, speaking of like favorites that ever exist.
Yeah, the song reminds me of like the sun shining.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's kind of like I just associate it with and again, like I didn't realize I was putting this on like every Sunday morning or Saturday morning to like start the day, and then I was like, oh yeah, no, I guess that's just like how
I'm seems trying. Like a great way to start the day to me, so I get it. Okay, everybody's favorite question. So if it's not Alice Coltrane, what is objectively the best song of all time?
So funky. What an interesting question. This one took me a bit. I think I actually might have put that song or this question at some point. But I chose Talk Talk's Eden. Spirit of Eden, which I think is like one of the objectively best records ever made.
Absolutely.
Oh wow. This song's perfect. Like it also has this organic thing where especially the later Talk Talk records, Spirit of Eden and Laughingstock, and I guess The Color of Spring a little bit, but they do sound like they came out of nothing. Like they're just kind of born, like they've always existed. And the crescendo in this song is so cool. Like then it happens maybe like two or three throughout it and just builds and then drops you into this thing where it's like there's like a rock thing, there's like jazz, there's something. It's like there, like no one sounds like this. And I know, like I've read where people have been like Talk Talk was influential to like post rock or whatever, like, you know, 90s like I know Tortoise was like really inspired, but it's like, I don't hear that at all. Like, I get it. Like, I fundamentally understand what it means, but I don't think that, like, that translates at all. Like, it's definitely like them making music that has never been made. And this song,
for sure,
I feel like is the way that that hits me, where I'm just like, there's no way, like, you know, and it was like a total failure record. Like,
right, of course.
No one of wanted the record. Like, everyone, like, I think it was like reviewed well, but it sold terribly. And I think the record company, I read a book about them, and they were just kind of like, yeah, we wanted to make this record, and it's amazing, and we're not going to tour it because we can't play it. We don't even know how to play it. But it's now, like, you know, usually revered, like, as their
right
best record.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
no, I mean, it's a perfect song. It's like, it feels like monumental, because like I said, there's all these things, but it, I don't know. It's, I don't even know that I have the words for it.
No, because there's, yeah, I was like struggling to even say that. I don't know if it would make sense to ever explain this band to people.
Yeah, right.
Even though, like, the stuff that everyone's heard is still pretty, you know, like, or the early pop stuff is not, it does not sound like anyone else.
No.
But this one, to me, has always been, there's so many parts of this song, I don't, it never sounds like I've never memorized what happens in this song. And I've listened to it 100 times. You know, like, there's always something where I'm like, oh, that's weird. Like,
right.
Never knew it. There's just,
yeah. Like,
thing there.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, okay, well, that works is the objectively. Well, okay, what's this?
There was like a line you said, like, about showing it to an alien, and I'm like, well, it's right, like, I can barely show this song to like a human if they haven't got it. So I was like, that's what made me think of this song.
I mean, maybe it was, yeah, maybe aliens would understand it better than we do. I don't know, because it's from another dimension. Okay, what's a song you used to love, but you've heard it recently, or you think about it now, and it doesn't quite do it for you the same way?
This one feels bad. Pavement's Gold Sounds. This is a fantastic song. It's probably my favorite of their hits. It's probably the most melodic hit they had. It's like the least weird song for, like,
sure.
I always thought the lyrics were really sweet, and it kind of takes me back to like high school a little bit. It sounds like very nostalgic for me, but I heard it recently and I was like, I can't listen to this. And I think some of it's like, and this is like no shade on this thing that's happening, but there's like this like slacker rock sort of like thing happening now in like indie rock.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
I think it all sounds like what it, it sounds like Pavement or a lot of these bands. I have no issues with any of it, but it's something about it. Like, maybe it's like the first time I'm hearing music from a younger generation playing music inspired by something that I was alive for, and it's sounding very off to, like it's not hitting. I don't have a problem with any of it. Like, that's great. Like,
sure.
It's just something about it. Like, it, now I don't want to hear, like,
Peyton, right,
Dinosaur Jr. or, you know, any of that kind of era, like, of music. So I feel like it's just happening again, and that's very,
it's just
it's a weird thing for me. Like, I definitely like this song, and I liked right. Sand, but it's like, yeah, it was.
No, I get it.
And I was like, I don't want to hear this song anymore. And usually the song puts me in a good mood.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, no, I mean, thinking about when, like, even like 90s fashion trends came back, it's just like, oh God. It's.
Yeah, I was like,
it makes me feel really old.
Well, yeah, that's the weird thing is like not being super old and then seeing like 22-year-olds dressing like what, like the school bully dressed like.
In yes.
Like 1995.
Yes.
With like jean shorts and like a Tasmanian devil shirt. Like, it's like, I didn't like that kid then. Like, now I've got like this thing. And again, like, no shade. I'm not trying to sound like a boomer at all. It's just, it's weird to see it. Like, it's like, I never in my life would have thought that would have been the thing. And it's cool. It's just,
it's just weird.
It throws me a little bit, you know, yes. Like, oh, that's, wow. I never thought like Bugle Boy would be like in fashion. Like, God,
totally. Yeah. Yeah. No, right there. It's just really strange. I don't know. Again, no judgment, no shit. Whatever. It just feels weird. And I have a hard time reconciling it.
It's weird. I heard people talk that about like our generation and
absolutely
before that. It's just,
I know. Yeah. Now we sound like a bunch of fucking boomers. Anyway. So I'm in favor of it all. I'm good for it. Just it's not for me.
No, I'll sign
Okay. What's a song that people hate? Some group of people, I don't know. People hate this song. You don't care. You love it anyway.
Yeah. I had such a hard time with this because I was like, I was trying to think of something and I chose, at least when I was growing up, everyone hated the song. But I feel like this band's come into fashion in my life lately, which is
Dire. It's a little
for nothing. I hated this song when I was growing up. And I think that was like, you know, growing up, like watching MTV, this was unavoidable. It was like one of the videos of all time. And I thought the song was so hokey and stupid. And everyone I hated it. And then one day, like, I was like, I love this song. And I same with like Sultan's a Swing, but it was like something that I feel like when I was young, it was just like very hated. And like anytime it'll come on the road, people are like, oh my God. But it's like, I really like this song. And that's like a new thing for me. And I'll play it and people are just like, what? Like, and I'm like, have you really listened to it? Like, it's really good. Like,
I remember when it was all, because I had the same thing. There was also like, it was, man, what's the George Harrison song? Got My Mind Set On, there was a couple songs that, you know, they were all on the radio, on MTV all the time. And I just remember thinking, what is this boomer shit? I didn't think boomer shit, but it was like, what is this shit my parents listen to? Get this shit out of here.
Yeah.
And then it's like,
terrible. It was something like that, like 80s, the dance from the 60s and stuff, like the Rolling Stones 80s period where you're like, this looks so dumb, or like Bowie's 80s period where you're like, everyone, like all these bands are like, in their 40s wearing like high rock, like suits and like playing like kind of like dumb rock, like Neil's record sucks in those years, like the spring, like it's always sort of like, it was just so corny to me. And then hearing that song and realizing that song's like totally in jest and like satire, which didn't hit as a kid.
Sure.
And, I'm curious. I'm like, how many people like this song? But I'm like, to me, it was very hated and everyone I knew hated it. But like now, I'm like, I bet most people I know maybe like this song. I don't know.
The
video getting like rinsed was weird. It was like 10 years out of, like, I'd be watching, you know, like 120 minutes or like whatever, like the 90s MTV. And then this song would play. I mean, like this video played like 10 times for 20 years. And it always felt like I was just getting punished. And now I'm like, that video is amazing.
It's like, can we do that again? Come on.
Yeah.
Like, Yeah, no, I get it. Okay, what's the most romantic song?
I chose Arthur Russell's "That's Us, Wild Combination." At first, when I was trying to find this song for the romantic song, I kept thinking of almost like sexy songs or something. And it was like loving it. And then I kept thinking about this song where I feel like this record came out in like 2008 or is when like these songs first got issues, like somewhere around then. Mm-hmm. And I just completely fell in love with the Calling Out of Context record. And I didn't really listen to the lyrics. I had no idea about his life or like, I don't think like the documentary wasn't out. There wasn't a ton. Mm-hmm. And I feel like he's so much more well known now, which is great, and like such a beautiful life. But I think I never like listened to his lyrics when I first listened to it. I was like, I just love the simplicity of the music, and it feels so earnest. But then, like once I started, you know, the song was being like this like love letter to his boyfriend. It's such a sweet song, and there's just.
Yes.
Like, it's very simple. The lyrics are very simple. Everything about it is just sort of like, I feel like it's like, the gist is like, I like hanging around you. And that's kind of it. Like, it's just like, it's like, you're my favorite.
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah.
And it's one of those, I don't know, is it onomatopoeia where it's like, the song sounds like the lyrics to me? Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds exactly like what it is.
It does. No, and I think that meant like, I totally agree where it's just like, you're my favorite person. And I want to be like, that's how I feel about my partner. Like we've been together for 23 years and she's still my favorite person.
No, 100%. And yeah, one of those things where, I had like a tough time picking it. I was like, I'm trying to think of like a lyrical song that I was like, what are these lyrics? Mm. Like think about this with like my wife or whatever it is. And then, this one just popped in there and I was like, yeah. And at some point, like years into knowing my wife, put on Arthur Russell and was like, yeah, I love Arthur Russell. I'm like, of course you do. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like, I didn't know that, but of course we both love this song, you know, like, we didn't have like a wedding song and I wouldn't be surprised if we could like totally agree on this being one of them, you know?
Right.
But yeah, I think this is just one of those songs that's like, I don't know anyone that doesn't like this song.
Yeah, I know. And if you didn't like it, I would be a little suspicious. Really?
it's so simple. It's like simply sweet. Like it's not like, again, like probably listened to it for a year without ever thinking about the lyrics. And then it just sort of like hit me one day. I was like, this is the nicest song about a person.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay, what's a song that changed your perspective on an artist, either for better or for worse?
I chose for better.
That's good. If this was for worse, I was gonna be very suspicious.
Do people pick worse often?
Mostly pick better, but sometimes we do worse.
Yeah, it's just a strange thing to focus on.
I know.
I chose 3-6 Mafia, Riding the Chevy. I loved 3-6 Mafia when I was a kid, but I only heard, like When the Smoke Clears and like all the singles that were like on MTV and stuff. And Josh Levi, shout out Josh Levi, who a ton of listeners will know. Josh had found this, like the Underground Volume 1 record, which was just not, you know, it wasn't popular. Like no one kind of knew about that then. And the first time I ever heard it, like the opening track, you're just like, oh, this is so a different thing. It's like, Jason Buffy has always been, like, I've always loved them, but then once I heard this, and it just turns you onto all the early stuff, and it's just, this is its own musical genre. And like,
Well,
everything,
exactly.
It's great, but yeah, this and like the Mystic Styles record, it's just like, cool, I'm going to listen to this every day for the rest of my life. And I'm, this one in particular, because it's, you know, it's the opening track and it just sets the tone so well. Like it's like one of those things where you're just like, I've heard this on the most songs, because it's, you put the album on, everyone I think now knows what it is, or if someone's like, oh, I've never heard that before, and you're like, oh, this is gonna, like,
this is gonna change your life.
Totally different thing. And yeah. I think, especially with the noise and experimental world, like, I don't know anyone that doesn't like Three Six Mafia.
I know.
I think that, like, went, like, hand in hand for this, like, I mean, I think this record is just made with, like, Casios and, like, you know, it's like,
right.
It's made horribly. And it's just a totally cool idea on hip hop. And it's so weird, and it's dark and moody, and it's strange, and it's repetitive. And it's just this, it's like, again, like, all their later stuff's cool, but, like, those first two, like, the compilations and Mystic Styles, it's like, there's nothing. There's people that aped that for sure, but it's like, there's nothing like that. Like, it doesn't sound like they were even inspired by hip hop. Like, it doesn't, like, it's like, right. Or something, like, if, like, someone explained hip hop to somebody and they were like, cool, I'll make it, but like, we didn't hear it.
Like, yeah.
Like, this is, it's like, there's beats. Samples and vocals, and you're just kind of like, cool, they did it like a totally alien way.
If I like that, if someone described it to you and they're like, okay, cool, I can make that with this very minimal shitty equipment, I could totally do that.
I'm just like, and it's again, it's like one of those like ubiquitous things in my life where everyone I know knows this, and if they don't, they're like, oh, this is unbelievable,
right?
Like, it's like I'm shooting like 10 for 10 on this one.
I was gonna say, I have showed this to many people and never gotten a bad response.
No, it's perfect, especially when like you've heard all the rest of it, like,
right,
like, I'm glad 36 Mafia got the popularity they did, and I'm in some way like happy that the early stuff is kind of like a four heads only thing. Like, you, this isn't like, if there was a bigger release of this stuff, I don't think it would be as well liked. I really do think it's, you're either like in this or you're not. But I've also never met someone who's not.
Okay, how about lyrics? What are your favorite lyrics?
This one I had the hardest time with, because I really like, I wanted to pick like a fall song. I'm a huge fan of the fall and Marquis Smith's lyrics, but I'm like, I don't know. Right. They're insane, you know what I mean? Right. Like, sort of like, and I just couldn't think of anything. And then I was listening to this record, and I was like, no, I love lyrics on this record. I don't think about them. And I think that's sort of, that's my favorite. So I chose Blue Jean Tierney's The Next Time Might Be Your Time off of Out of the Blue, his first record. This song always puts me in a really nice mood. And it was one of those things where I listened to for years and never really thought also like about the lyrics. Like, I liked them, but then I remember sitting down and reading him at some point, because I never had the record for probably 10 years before I actually got the record. I was listening to it,
right,
a download or something. And I was reading the lyrics on the record, and I was like, oh, this kind of like, you know, Robert Ashley, who's like in that camp and like a lot of that stuff. It's like, they're like little quips on philosophy and life and death, and but they're very easy. Like, they're sort of just like, they're like light. Like, it's like light.
Right. It's like, right. Yeah. It's like, light. It's very approachable. Like,
And there's a lot of lines in the song that, again, I don't like think about as being like super powerful or poignant. Like, there's one line where it's like, we're not attached or separate in space, and I was just kind of like, what does that mean? Like, and it's all just this sort of like, everything's fine. Like, the song,
everything's fine.
You're fine. You're great. It's gonna be okay. Life's good. And it's but like in this smart way, like a lot of that sort of like, and the same thing with like Robert Ashley and all that, where it's like, I listened to it so many times and there's a story there, but it's, you'll kind of find these little lines and just be like, oh, well, that's funny, or like very lighthearted given this whole like pretty serious record. And like a sense of humor, I think.
This episode is brought to you by Spreaker, the platform responsible for a rapidly spreading condition known as podcast brain. Symptoms include buying microphones you don't need, explaining RSS feeds to confused relatives, and saying things like, sorry, I can't talk right now, I'm editing audio. If this sounds familiar, you're probably already a podcaster. The good news is Spreaker makes the whole process simple. You record your show, upload it once, and Spreaker distributes it everywhere people listen. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and about a dozen apps your cousin swears are the next big thing. Even better, Spreaker helps you monetize your show with ads, meaning your podcast might someday pay for, well, more microphones. Start your show today at Spreaker.com. Spreaker, because if you're going to talk to yourself for an hour, you might as well publish it.
It is also kind of what it is, because it's like, again, like, I love The Fall, I love the lyrics in there, but they're,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if they mean anything to me. I'm just like, this is so abstract, and it like gets my brain working.
Right.
Doesn't necessarily, like, I'm not like, yeah, that was like an important lyric to me. I'm just like,
right,
that's insane that someone came up with that. Right. And this is sort of like, you know, just a really sweet song of, and the whole record of Out of the Blue, I think, is
such a great record.
Absolutely perfect record, if not my favorite, mm-hmm. that kind of era, Mills College,
yeah,
kind of stuff. But also, like, kind of underrated. Like, I don't, mm-hmm. like, I've shown tons of people this record and had no idea it existed. And I think he got a little bit of his due when he passed a couple years ago, but I still think this is like one of those records everyone
right.
would, like, I've shown this record to my parents, they loved it. Like, I've shown, you know, it's like, it's,
yep.
it's a beautiful record that just doesn't, I don't know.
I know what you mean. Yeah, no, I'm, it's a record that I think there's something for everybody, and not in a, like, it's like dumbed down, or it's, you know, it's so shallow kind of way that anybody, but
yeah,
I always expect more people to know about it than do. Like, I think what you're saying, how it's, he did get some, I don't know. It still feels underappreciated, or, cause yeah, I don't, it's like 3-6 or like 666. Like, I don't know that I've played this for anybody and they were like, oh no, it's, I don't like that. Like, anybody I've played this for, like, this is amazing. How did I know about this?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And it can exist. It's like, this record, I feel like, should be, same with the Arthur Russell stuff, where it's like, I feel like this has been on the radio, or like,
yeah,
people that listen to like Fleetwood Mac would like this, or whatever it is. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. 70s pop. Like, this is right in that alley.
Yeah. This is amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I don't understand how any of this fucking shit works. What song have you, or can you listen to the most?
I picked Lee Perry's Zion's Blood from the
Hell. Yes.
Record Super 8, which is probably maybe the best, or like one of the most celebrated Lee Scratch Perry records.
Yeah.
One of my favorites. This song, yeah, again, maybe it's, you know, that it's like opening track kind of thing, where it's like you've just heard it a million times. I also, like, anytime I put on, like, make mixes for people, or we're having like a party or a barbecue. Mm-hmm. DJing like a low key thing, I'll just always just start with this.
It's good, yeah.
It's got perfect. That. I don't know. I always picked The Specials' "Ghost Town" for this, and
that's a great song too.
I really, they both kind of remind me of each other, where they're like, they're so downbeat, and they're kind of like almost like spooky. Like, I feel like Ghost,
yeah,
would like this song.
Yes, like, yeah. There's so. Yeah, there's something like weirdly, it's mystical, and I don't know. Like, I think the spooky thing, the way, and this is such a like Lee Perry thing, but there's sounds that just like appear and then disappear.
Oh, for
like,
sure.
They're ghosts, you know? Like, it's just like, wait.
Yeah, and I've heard, I'm going to blank on the term, but I've heard that a lot of like the echoes used in dub and or like to evoke like spirits and things like that.
Yeah.
This song has that. There's this part, like, it's almost like a bridge halfway through the song where there's just these kind of like, the lyrics stop, but there's these kind of like, mm-hmm. the little things, and they're so well placed, and they happen one time and they never happen. Yeah. And the song just kind of, again, just kind of happens. And it feels like I'm on like a ghost ship or something, like this, like just
weird
ride. Like, it's, I always thought this would be like a cool song to play in, like, not a haunted house. That's corny, but it, like, it's just like a weird, I don't know. Like, It'd be great if there's you just walk into a weird room and you're just kind of like, I don't know what this is, but like this is just this thing. And I do feel like, you know, I'm listening to like dub and reggae a good chunk of my life, but this one always just was like, again, like I put this on every mix, I put this on every DJ set. Yeah. We'll always show this to people, and everyone, again, like kind of is like universally liked.
Yeah, oh, it's so good. What's the best hype song?
Just DJ Rashad, Pass That Shit. I kind of knew I was gonna pick a footwork song for this, and I could probably go a lot of different ways. I think like some RPG songs and probably a lot of other DJ Rashad songs. This song's so cool because it starts off really heavy and then goes into this like really not heavy thing, but it's like the song is so active, but it's such like a downy or downer like weed song, but it's also like it's almost like they're just like, let's get super hyped to smoke weed and chill.
Yeah,
like it's like chilling hard. Like,
yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like relentless chilling.
Yeah, like let's yeah, that's like, yeah, that's a perfect description. I mean, like, I'm about to do this thing that is extremely lethargic. I was such a big fan, like, when I was, you know, living in Chicago, like, when all the footwork stuff was coming out, this record especially, I was just 100% in. And still now, like, footwork is easily my, like, favorite hype thing. It's, like, my favorite thing to DJ. Mm-hmm. It's so great and it's so fun, and like Rashad's the king, RIP. But yeah, this song has a vibe to it that I don't think is really matched, where it's like it's hype again, it is, but it is relentlessly chill. Like, this could be like a downer mix or a hype mix. Like, I don't know, really confusing thing for him because a lot of his songs are kind of one or the other. They're like feeling good, or hype, like put this song on in the club, and this song I think any which way, and I think that kind of fits my style.
Okay, last two questions. What is the song that means the most to you, not necessarily the song itself because of an association with someone, something,
etc.? I chose Sade's Paradise. My dad was rinsing Sade in the early 90s.
Like, nice.
Anytime in the car, it's like his first three albums on tape. Nothing but those. And like Anita Baker, he really liked like Spyro Gyro and some stuff that it was just like horrific to listen to. But I remember like vividly, like we were moving across country. I rode with my dad and the dog, and we just listened to his Sade records like crazy, and for years he was just playing in his car. You know, there'd be like 10 cassettes that lived in the car, and it would just be like three of those are Sade, maybe like greatest hits on top of that.
Sure.
And this one, Stronger Than Pride, was just rinsed. So I always think about it as my childhood, and kind of that thing we were talking about earlier where like I don't know if I liked it as a kid, but growing up later, you're like, oh yeah, this is the best music.
Like, yeah, this is like
you hear the song and when you're 10, you're like, turn it off. But like, put this on when you're like 25, and you're like, oh shit, this is the best music I've recorded. It almost gives me like, I'm sure I was like, I wasn't like thrilled to be listening to it as a kid, but it is a nice memory to go back. It's so much better than anything else that I could have been listening to with like my parents.
Right. Absolutely.
Whatever it might be. So yeah, the song is really
such a good song.
All of the Sade songs have a
right
in my heart, but this one's definitely got the kind of that little
extra
for whatever reason. Like it's like, I can pick any of them, but this one, like I was immediately like, Paradise. That's the one.
I love that. That's awesome. Okay, what is, at least in this moment of time, maybe it changes, maybe this is always the answer, what is your favorite song Or I should say songs in your case, because yeah, she cheated.
I'm honestly going to change one of them already. I had such a hard time. So I was talking to a friend of mine about this, and they were like, which Misfits song are you putting on the... I was like, yeah, I guess I have to, but I don't know if I have a favorite Misfits song. And then another thing, I was like, what Stereolab song are you putting on? And I was like, oh, shit, I guess I have to. And then I was like... I don't know what my favorite song is, so I picked two. I initially picked The Misfits Where Eagles Dare. I'm gonna
change. Ain't no goddamn son of a bitch.
Amazing, yeah, amazing lyric. I think I'm actually gonna change it to The Misfits Cough Cool. This episode. But and then I'm gonna back it with Stereolab's Super Electric. So I'm gonna pick those as my two favorite songs. I don't know if they're my two favorite songs. They might not even be my two favorite Misfits or Stereolab songs, but then I immediately think of that. I'm like, okay, what are my two favorite, like, at least for bands? Like, I'm like, easy,
right?
Like, Misfits and Stereolab, Don't Get Old to Me. I've been listening to Misfits since I was like 12, Stereolab since probably like 15 16, and yeah, I was kind of just like, well, Where Eagles Dare, Cough Cool is just gonna be,
yeah,
it's just, there it is. Yeah. So it's like probably not even the songs I heard at first. I think I probably heard Hybrid Moments first and was just kind of like I had like Ramones records and like, you know, that's like the Sex Pistols and pretty straightforward punk. But then when I heard The Misfits, I was like, this is so much cooler. But like, and I say that, like, this is everything about it's cooler. And Stereolab was another one of those things where once I like saw the artwork and I heard them, they were like the gateway band that got me into synthesizers and like krautrock, and like probably the biggest gateway band for me was by far. Like, it was like Nurse with Moon. Like, I'm like, what's that? You know what I mean? You're like, oh, this is fucked up. Like,
right.
And The Misfits was just kind of like, oh, cool. I'm just going to watch every movie that they reference.
to bring it all back to where we start, I mean, you know, in some weird way, thinking about Ground Fault Matinee, it's like your Misfits meets Stereolab record. It's your punk.
Oh, that's like, oh, that's funny. I mean, like, there's
new bands. I mean, it kind of works.
Yeah, a little bit. And I just saw Stereolab this, like, I don't know, maybe a few months ago, and it was, I got to see them a little bit in the heyday, or not really the heyday, like Sounddust was like, I think the first time I got to see them. And then I sort of never imagined seeing them again. Cause they were like on hiatus for years. Mm. And then recently I was kind of like, yeah, no, it'll be fun. Like, and I got to see this like secret show of theirs in Chicago a couple of years, like maybe 2019, when they like first reunited. And I was just like in tears the whole night. I was like, yeah, it'll be fun. And then I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And then the same thing like last time, like I'm like, yeah, it'll be fun. And like, I'm just like, yes. Like, it's the opposite of The Misfits, because I know people who have gone and seen like whatever the reunited Misfits is. And I'm like, I couldn't be less interested.
Right.
It's so silly as all out to me.
Yeah. Man.
Yeah. Sarah, well, Misfits.
Misfits.
I think Super is the right one for that. I think The Misfits is going to be anything that, you know.
Yeah.
There's
a lot to pick from.
Yeah.
Well, all right. We made it through. Thank you for doing this. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm glad we finally made it happen after months of forgetting to email each other. Yep. Ground Fault Matinee is out now on Gateway Gardenia. Is that the?
Yeah, that's like a new
label,
Nashville imprint. And you can listen wherever streaming is.
Yeah, go buy the record, people. Come on. Once again, thank you to Brett Nocke. Ground Fault Matinee is out now. News Pressing is out now. And you can listen to all his picks, the link in the show notes, and, you know, all the stuff. Thank you all for listening. If you enjoy this, please leave a rating, review, subscribe, all that stuff. If you really, really like it and like Foxy Digitalis and think it all does cool stuff, and maybe you think I do cool stuff, patreon.com/FoxyDigitalis for as little as $3 a month. You can help support the cause, get longer episodes, ad-free, depending on what tier you sign up, you can get even more. I don't know. It helps, and I appreciate everybody who is a member there. There's also links to other things you can, you know, donate one time, or you can pick up something on the Jewel Garden. You know, everything on there is pay what you can. And again, all of it goes to help keeping Foxy D alive. All right, that's it. I'll stop my spiel. And until next time, keep on listening to whatever the hell you want.